This is an interview with Martha Shearer of Georgetown, Florida, February 12th, 1985. This is Mary Ann McDonald.
Here we go now, I got it.
I'll just lay that there and then we can just forget about it. Put that over here.
Well, that was, see that shrug that you just fell down?
Yeah.
I just finished that one of the girls. Likes these. I made her one just for Christmas. I'm going to tantalize her with that one. She likes red, so.
Oh, yeah. And do you like green? Is that your favorite?
Oh, I like all colors.
You like all?
Red especially.
What? Which
red.
One? Red. Yeah, red is pretty. So you were saying that you were born and raised where?
In Illinois.
In Illinois. Uh-huh. Oh. Canton, did you say?
Canton.
Huh. Is that on the river?
No, it's inland.
Uh-huh.
And we were both... Well, like I told you, city bred.
Uh-huh.
Then we met this old man on the... he pulled his boat up alongside of ours, and he looked over. He was 83.
Wow.
Well, Davy Wilcoxon. And he was 83, and he had raised his family on the houseboat.
Oh, amazing.
He was a regular river rat. He
uh-huh.
really was. And Bus was 38, and I was 40. And... He said, do you kids, see, to him, we were just kids, do you kids mind if I tell you something? And we said, well, no, we don't mind. I looked at Buzz, and Buzz kind of nodded his head, go ahead and listen. And I said, what do you, he says, well, you've got your hooks on backwards. And I said, I thought he was pulling on my leg, you know, I didn't know. So I said, what do you mean backwards, Davy? So he held up. He started in the tub. He started out 12 hooks before he found one that was right. The 12th one was the one that was right. And he held it up and he explained, if you thread it from the front, it hangs backwards. If you thread it the other way, vice versa. When the fish hits it, it tips away from them. If you get it threaded right, the hook will tip into them. So I went home that, and I listened, what he had to tell me. So I went home, and when I chipped that line up on the box, I changed all the hooks on it. The next morning, we caught more fish off that one line than we had caught off the three of them in days. So it didn't take very long to get set up all the way. And that was the only thing that anybody ever told us what to do.
How did you decide to take fishing on the river? I mean, what made you decide?
Because when we were in town, we both liked to hunt. Mm-hmm. We both liked to fish.
Just with a pole?
Sport fishing mm-hmm. and hunting. Well, my dad didn't have any boys. When I was growing up, he taught me how to fish, how to hunt, and all that. And Mary Ann, I used to wonder, what will I do if I meet somebody that doesn't like the things I like? And... his aunt said about him, well, what in the world would a wife do? She'd just be sitting at home if she didn't like the things that Buzz liked. He'd go on about his hunting and fishing.
Uh-huh.
Well, we just fit in just like that,
That's
you know,
perfect.
Because, and so we, all our vacations and everything, we'd take our little girls with us when we went hunting. We took them with us when we went fishing. They just grew up, and they're both of them are excellent shots, just perfect.
Wow.
And you know that they married men that don't care a whoop about anything like that at all.
That's too bad.
That's the way things go, it seems like. Just seems like. So when the girls, I said, first of all, instead of me going away, we went to the reason that we went to the river.
Mm-hmm.
The shop where Bus worked didn't have a war contract,
mm-hmm.
and they encouraged their young men with families to go into an ammunition factory where they would be exempt from the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they didn't encourage their unmarried men to do that, just the older ones. So when we came out of there, we thought we'd be there maybe 6 months or so. 3.5 years we were there.
Wow.
And... So when we came back to our home, the older girl stayed with Grandpa to finish her high school. And my dad lived with us. And so when we got back, she was graduating that year. And when we got back to out of the war plant, Bus went to the factory. He came home and he was, oh, he wasn't very enthusiastic about going back to work there.
Because he was a machinist, you said?
Uh-huh, a tool and die designer.
Uh-huh.
And so I didn't want to start the beauty shop again. And I said to him, at this stage in our life, let's go, there wasn't any place to spend our money in this war plant. The one town was 27 miles that way, or 37 miles that way, and 38 the other way. We were in the middle between the two of them,
uh-huh.
And this little town had a bank, so we just bank our money and get our groceries there and go. We didn't go about shopping. We didn't have time.
Yeah.
Because he had two shifts, and so did I. There wasn't anybody to take over either one of our jobs.
Were you doing war work or just...
War, an ammunition factory in Iliopolis.
Iliopolis?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've never heard of that.
Between Springfield and Decatur, this little town of Iliopolis, and they had built this ammunition factory. Remington Rand had built it. Well, before we went into that particular one, we went to St. Louis, and they had filled their... Bus stayed there long enough that they got all their contract was through.
Right.
So then there was a place in Minneapolis, Minnesota that was going to open up. Well, we went up there, but they weren't ready.
Mm-hmm.
So we came back to Canton, to our home, to put the little girls in school, the littlest one. And then we heard about Iliopolis just opening up, so we went down there and in order to stay there. Bus signed up and he said, I'll sign up if you'll sign my wife up. Well, he went to work the next day and that went along 2 weeks and nobody called me. It was just opening up and they were hiring like mad. Well, their policy was not to hire from the same family, you see, but they didn't tell us that. To get him to sign up, they said yes. And I filled out all my, you know where they filed mine? In the wastebasket.
Oh, no.
So we went there, went back, and because we couldn't afford to stay away from home. And there's a little story behind that, too. We had a 10-room house at home.
Oh, goodness, that sounds big.
And two big halls and two baths and a full basement. And it was, and I was always wanting something all on one floor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got down there to Iliopolis. It was just about this big. It wasn't quite this big. It was a milk shed.
Oh, gosh.
Originally.
Oh,
and they lined it and put a sink and a stove and a bed. And,
and that was for you and your husband and three little girls?
Two. One little girl. The other little girl, the bigger girl was at home. So we went from... that, and the older girl came down to visit one day, and she said, well, Mother, she says, you've got this thing all set up now. She says, all on one floor and all in one room. She could see the funny part.
That's funny.
But really? When we got back then, I said to Buzz, well, why don't we go over on the river and see if we can find something over there and try the fishing.
Uh-huh.
We like to sport fish so much, and I said, that gives a whole new life. And so we went, and
have a boat? Or?
No. 3 days we looked for something. We couldn't find anything. So we had a long time ago been guests at a hunting lodge, hunting and fishing lodge.
Mm-hmm.
We had been a guest of one of the members there. And as we came by that place, I said, well, let's drive in. He said, well, you know it's private. And I said, yeah, but we've been guests, and maybe the same caretakers there. Maybe they aren't. I don't know. Well, let's just go in and see what it looks like. Tell them what we're up to, that we had been guests there. Well, the same caretakers weren't there, and it had been a number of years gone by to see since we had been guests.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the members of the secretary of the club happened to be there that day, and he said, you know what, we told him what we were over there, you know, that we had been guests. He says, you know, this old couple, want to retire, want to get out of it. And he said, there's an opening for a caretaker.
Oh.
And he told us, Mary Ann, you know what we took that for?
What?
$50 a month after making all this fabulous. The next tax season that came around, here comes the IRA bit people to see why we were such a high bracket down there at that ammunition factory and then dropped down to something like that. They thought something screwy was going on.
That's amazing. And so
well,
you took care of that club?
Uh-huh.
And did you fish while you were doing that?
We learned. That's where we learned.
And you did mostly cat lines?
No, see, we had to take care of that. Cat lining was just a side issue right then. And so we were over there. The object of doing that was to be over there where we could look around and see a place to buy. Because we knew we wanted to do it.
Yeah.
So we didn't drag our feet. We went into it with our eyes wide open. So we were there 2 years at the club. And I learned a lot. Cooking, most I'd ever cooked for was five, and there I'd have all the way from 37, 38 every weekend.
Wow, that's a lot.
But my husband was good to help, and so was the youngest girl, and so we got along fine. Well, anyway, we went from, we found a place then up the river, about maybe 27 miles, something like that. And so we bought that place.
That was on the Mississippi?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was at Aquaca. And that's an Indian name for Banks of Yellow Land. So we started out. But Mariana, I'll fess up. If we hadn't had that little nest egg from the ammunition factory to coast on, we probably would have gone back to town because it was pretty rough for us beginning and not knowing a thing about it. But we learned.
Yeah.
And after about 2-3 years, we got into full swing of it. And then one of our friends that lived in one of the towns there, Roseville, she said, well, why we were so successful was because we had to work it out for ourselves and we didn't do it like Grandpa did it, or the uncle did it, or the dad did it. We learned from scratch. And that way we were wide open for improvement instead of copying.
Yeah.
And we got to be the best.
So did you quit working at the club after 2 years?
Yes. We resigned from there.
And then went to full-time fishing?
Up the at Aquaca.
And it was just catlining?
No, we tried about all of it at first.
They
call it trout lining up there.
Mm-hmm.
And we had nets and we had baskets and
during wooden baskets?
Fish.
Wooden or wire baskets?
The wooden ones.
Did you make those? Or
yes, we made those. We learned how to make those while we were at the club. There was a fellow that had a pretty good layout up the river from us, but he couldn't. The dike that went across to the place where he had would flood out. Mm-hmm. So he would at first he was real uneasy about whether we would let him come in there and launch from our place and then go up the river.
Right.
Well, he found out that his sons were both in the army; they were still in the service. And the old man was trying to do it himself. And he found out that we had a little money. And he said to Buzz, would you like to buy in with me and go halves? So Buzz bought in with him.
And that was bought in
on the whole fishing gear, the nets and the baskets and the everything.
Uh-huh.
Well, we learned some from him.
Uh-huh.
Enough that when we went on our own, that we could carry on.
Oh, that's great.
A trammel netting? Marianne, I never... well, it's a trammel net where the fish run into it and get all tangled up in it, and then you have to take them out. And down here, the trammel netting is, I think, outlawed. I don't know.
I haven't heard of it.
I don't know whether they let them trammel net yet, but they do other kind of, and gill nets.
Right.
And all that.
Schmitz use.
Mm-hmm. But the trammel net is a different, it's a big webbing, and then the little webbing, when they run through it, it pockets them. And
I've never seen that.
Pulls them into it. When they run into the big net, then the little net pockets them, they can't get out. That's a trammel net.
Trammel. Is that T-R-A-M-M-E-L?
Mm-hmm. And I never knew enough to come home when we'd go trammel netting, when we tried all that. Well, we fished along about 3 years, and the game warden came to us one day, and he said, down to Springfield at the state capitol, he said, the conservation people want some helpers to restock lakes that had gone bad.
Uh-huh.
So he said, would we be interested? He said, you're all set up here, you know all of them. And he says, they'll furnish it, everything. And so we went down to see the people. And then they came back up to our place, and we ended up with a motor and a truck and the light boxes and everything to keep them in, and a good salary.
Great.
And we worked for them. Now, this is where we first learned about politics.
Uh-huh.
Came election time. We worked 3 years. Came election time. Well, we didn't think anything about it, you know. Come election time, here comes a notice from Springfield, turn in our rig that it had been turned over to somebody else.
Oh, so it was an appointment position.
Yeah. So that was our first experience with political bit. So in the meantime, Bus had worked, and they said for Bus to hire a helper. Well, Bus didn't know anybody, and he said to the fellows at Springfield, he said, well, my wife works with me all the time. On her own. Well, he says, you can't have somebody in the family. He said, but there's a way around it. He said, when we send you the check, you'll go ahead and hire her. And when we send you the check, it'll be for Bus Shear and helper. So that's the way they see. They never mentioned me, that I was part of the thing. So that way, then we got to work together. Well, after... they appointed this other fellow, and he came down to the place, and he said, do you know that I worked for the political outfit? And he said, I don't want this job. He said, I don't want you to think that I asked for it. He says, they just gave it to me. And he says, frankly, I don't know a damn thing about it.
Really?
He said, I don't know one fish from another. He said, I wouldn't know what to do. And he said, would you help? Well, Bus thought, well, sure, because our job was gone anyway.
Yeah.
That poor soul. So we showed him everything we could. How he turned out from there, I don't know how it worked out for him, but we showed him everything we could. But
how did you happen to come down here?
Well, in the meantime, three of those winters, we had been fishing through the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And you pull your chop your hole and put your net in, and then the next day you go and chop the new ice out and pull your net out. And Marianne, it was so cold when those fish would hit the top of that ice, they'd get frost all over them.
Wow.
Snow white, just freeze right there.
Gosh.
And I have looked back and I thought, oh dear, how in the world did Bus and I stand to do that?
Too cold.
Oh yes. Well, all right. We had a good summer. We saved our money to go through the winter with groceries and oil for the furnace and the place that we had bought. We put in a pipeless furnace.
Mm-hmm.
And we had money for that. I was sitting there one day and I said, Bussy, why don't we, Susan had married in the meantime. I said, Bussy, why don't we take that money that we've got saved up for oil and put it through gas and go south. And about that time they were building up here in South Carolina. I've forgotten what they're building. I mean, maybe that big nuclear plant or something. I don't know, something big in about.
What year
there.
Was this?
Oh, this is 1950.
50.
Oh. Uh-huh. And so I said, let's just go on down the south and around and then come back up. So he packed up his toolbox and his paintbrushes, and we thought we could get something.
Yeah.
And I said, if necessary, well, I always kept my duty license up, but states now don't recognize each other. So that was on. And I said, well, if I have to, I'll wash dishes or wait tables or anything to get through the winter.
Uh-huh.
Then go back. Okay, we hit New Orleans. We didn't have much money to spend, but we spent, I think it was 6 or 7 days there. And we had a lot of fun looking, Marianne.
I bet.
Just a lot of fun looking. Well, then we came on around Biloxi and on around. We got down to Homestead.
Uh-huh.
And that's
Homestead
where
Homestead in Florida?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
We came right on around, you know, with Tarpon Spring. Oh, we took it all in as we went. Didn't spend much money doing it, but just...
Just gas.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And we had a camper bed, so we didn't have to... Get motels or anything.
Uh-huh.
And we'd hit supermarkets for food. That way you didn't have to eat out.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we got to Homestead, and I said to Buzzy, we talked it over and said, well, shall we go on down to Key West and see that? We'd heard about Key West.
Uh-huh.
Shall we go down there and see what it's like and then come on back? And so we got down to Key West, and we pulled into a filling station there, and Buzz went in, and I told the fella that we'd like to park on the ramp mm-hmm. that night. And he said, oh, sure. And he said, I'll leave the restroom open for you. Back then, they did those kind of things.
Uh-huh.
They don't now.
Uh-huh.
So the next morning, Bus went into the restroom, and he came back out. He said, I just met a fella in there. He said, he's on the shrimp boats. And he said, they're hiring. And the fella asked him, Bus, mm-hmm. you could see he was in Yankee.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Southerner. He came out of South Carolina.
Huh.
And he'd come down there and shrimp during the cold weather. So he said to Buzz, are you looking for a job? And Buzz said, well, yes and no. And then he told that they were hiring down at the shrimp docks. And Buzz said, I don't know anything about shrimp. And he said, that's just the kind they hire. That's the kind they like, because they can train them to do what they want. So I said, well, what about it? And I said, well, let's go on down and see what they have to offer. So he shipped out the next morning.
Wow.
Well, that afternoon, we knew I couldn't stay in that camper out on the streets.
Yeah.
So we had to hustle around, find a place to live.
Uh-huh.
And I finally found a place that the lady's husband had died, and she was taking in roomers.
Mm-hmm.
And she only had just one little old room left. It was at the head of the stairway, and they had put a curtain across. There was a bed and a dresser and a chair.
Wow.
And that was it. And
oh my goodness.
Well, it was we just couldn't find anything else.
Yeah.
And I had to have it that night, you know, so I wouldn't be on the streets. So we rented it, and he went. Marianne about broke my heart, though, because they wouldn't take a woman on. No women, no suitcases, no dogs, no cats. Oh, they're a superstitious lot. They
really?
Shrimpers are.
Really?
And
so how long, where was that? What town was that?
That was Key West.
In Key West?
Uh-huh.
So how long did he do that?
3.5 months. We went down to stay half a day and stayed 3.5 months.
Wow. So then did you come up here?
Then, no. Then the story the plot thickens.
Uh-huh.
We went back there 3 seasons, in the winter seasons.
Uh-huh.
And then they got funny about you had to have a Florida car tag.
Oh, goodness.
To outer staters.
Uh-huh.
Well, we weren't ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had seen some good pole and line fishing on around at Goodland. Well, so we fooled... On one of those trips down, we had stopped and fished some of those canals.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to Goodland and see what's back there.
Uh-huh.
Well, that happened to be stone crabs. And we were there 3 seasons.
Wow.
And that was quite an experience. I worked. When we first went, we fished trout.
Uh-huh.
The sea trout out in the Keys.
Yeah.
And we got us a map so we'd know where to, so we wouldn't get lost in all those keys down there.
Really?
And it was quite an experience. So one day the fella at the fish house there where we sold our fish, he came over to the camper. There was a parking, recreational vehicle bit there where they rented out lots. And so he came over to the camper and he said, are you going to go fishing today? I said, yeah, just as soon as the tide changes. And he said, well, one of my men on the boat came in drunk, and he said he can't go out.
Mm-hmm.
He says, will you come and fill in for him? And Bus looked over at me, and we always consulted each other, and I said, yeah, you go ahead. I'll fish alone today, because I knew the maps and the boats and everything. So he went with the fella. Well, the next morning, here he was again at the camper door, and he said, Bus, how would you like to hire on? He said, the Ray is still drunk, and he said, I can't depend on him. And he says, how would you like to hire on? He says, you were such good help yesterday. Would you like to hire on steady? Well, again, we had to talk it over, because that left me fishing alone. Well, so I said, well, go ahead and try it. And
was this in the early 60s?
50.
Late 50s?
About middle 50s.
Uh-huh.
In fact, it'd be about 56 and 57.
Mm-hmm.
So he went with, and I went, and one day Bum, the fellow that was running partners with the other fellow, said, came over and he said, what are you doing today? And I said, well, I'm going to go fishing. He said, well, I've got another job for you if you'll take it. He said, they did guide service there. He said, I want you to guide some people. He said, I've run out of guides. And he said, you know the keys and you know what to do and everything. I said, I've never done any guiding. He said, well, you know enough about it. He said, go on out there and take me. He said, I need you desperately. He says, you can have the whole guide fee if you'll just keep these customers. Mary Ann, that was a lark. I had more fun than they did.
Really?
And so I did quite a bit of guiding then for...
Would these be fishermen, sports fishermen that wanted to be guided?
Yeah,
the
Yankees, the Northerners, the people from upstate that wanted a guide to take them out, you know, the deep sea fishing.
So how long did you do that?
All of that season.
Wow.
So the next season, during some part of that... Let's see, I'm getting a little bit ahead of my story. Are you warm enough?
I'm just about warm enough. I was just going to put my legs over here a little bit.
You want to turn that around a little bit?
Oh, I'm fine, I think.
And, Bum had come over, Bus was out on the boat, and I was getting ready to go out trout fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And he came over and he said, will you paint a boat for me today? And I said, yes. And because we had bought a little boat off of him and painted it up to go fishing. He knew I could paint. So, and by the way, Bus and I always build all of our own boats.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And so I went and painted that boat. Before I got through, he had ordered 18. I painted all those. Then's when he came and asked me if I'd go guiding for him, after I had painted all those 18 boats.
That's a lot of work.
I know, but it was good. A dollar an hour way back then, and your own hours. You could work any hours that you wanted, as many hours or as few.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
So
then did you come up here?
No. We got to Goodland this one year, and... then they wanted me, Mom's wife was secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she got sick. They had twins, and she got sick and couldn't So he came over and he said, "Will you come over and keep the books?" I said, "I never kept any books, only our own." He said, "Well, if you'll just help out until we can find a bookkeeper." He says, "Maybe he'll show you how, what she wants in the books." Mm-hmm. And he said, "And a couple days after you're there, the accountant out of Naples will come down," and he comes every, I believe it was every week or, yeah, every week for uh-huh. until I was trained. So all I knew was just Mady's and his system. I didn't know any other.
Yeah.
So I kept books. I was off the
wow.
off the water then. I kept books. And Marianne, I never did. And then when we were getting ready to come back north, the accountant didn't want us to come back. He said, "Bus is a good one." He said, "The minute Bus leaves that boat," he said, "you know, that what'll happen to that?" He said,
"Well, did you ever think about staying down year round?" Or
no.
Why?
Because we had a business in the north of our own.
Yeah.
We had a wholesale and retail business of our own.
Yeah.
And we'd build it out, and you know, the prices up there are so much better than they are down here.
Mm-hmm. So what year did you move down here to Georgetown? Oh.
There and pull lionfish. Well, while we were there, we found out that there was freshwater catfish, freshwater lakes, uh-huh. a lot of them. We didn't know anything about it. We just, you know, come on down, go to salt water. We liked the salt water, but the other was. So we stopped there, and we found out that there was freshwater catfishing. So we stopped at Lake Kissimmee. And there was an old boat there, and a fellow wanted to give it to us, and he said, "No, we'll just give you a dollar for it." So then it'd be ours. He couldn't say, after we got it fixed up, he couldn't say, "Well, you yeah. know, it's mine." It wasn't much. We called it patches. We patched it out and went fishing.
Wow.
We happened to have some of our rig with us. I always tied hooks year round, so mm-hmm. we'd be ready for our summer fishing up there. So we set up and fished out of there, and Stokes always would.
In Kissimmee? Lake Kissimmee?
Mm-hmm. And Burl Stokes would always send us a truck, no matter where we were parked on. Junior Parker over here says that we know more about, he was born and raised here, but we know more about Florida than he does.
Because you've been all over.
Yeah. Well, the way we happened to find this place, I believe it was about the third year that we fished, we hit those lakes down there when they were dead. We moved 11 times that year, Marianne, before we found something, and it was down here at Volusia Bar at the far end. We uh-huh. camped at Blue Creek.
Uh-huh.
We had money enough left to get back home.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to Bus, "Let's go in," said the Blue Creek Lodge. He said, "Well, now you know it'll just be a sport camp." And I said, "Yeah, but let's go on in and see what it's like." We got in there and got to talk, and Bus was kind of discouraged and provoked about that time, all those moves we'd made. We sent the little girls some Easter stuff. Now we had money to get back north if nothing turned up here. We got down there, and I rented the place for the camper way down in the woods, down the canal on Blue Creek.
Uh-huh.
And we hit that Volusia Bar, and we put out our lines that night. And Marianne, I swear that it seemed to us that like there was a fish on every hook. This was a live river. Mm-hmm. So we fished down there, I believe it was about 6 or 8 weeks. And then it came time to go back north. Well, Burl Stokes, by that time we knew him pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Will you come up to my son or my brother-in-law's place and mm-hmm. tell him, get him kind of straightened out, get some of his helpers." He says, "You're doing so good at this lake," and they weren't doing anything. Well, they were fishing great, big hooks and stationary lines, and they didn't dress their fish very good. Now, we dress our fish a whole lot different than they do down here. And
you do?
Oh, yeah.
How do you do it?
Well, we don't chop them off at the, we would save all this neck part down here. They just chop them off, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't half clean them. Well, when we were working for Stokes, when we got down here, we said to him one day, he said, "Now, we should have more money for our clean fish than you do for your dirty fish."
Wow.
And he said, "Well, what do you mean?" And Bud said, "Well, he says, you buy hide and guts and a whole lot of stuff that you you have to clean them up when you get them in here." And he said, we clean our fish and they're clean and they're ready to go to market. And we have some friends in the north that we can give you the, you know, the customers. And so while we were in the office talking to him, he sent one of his, he called one of his workers up from down below. He had his offices up above, and he called him up there. We didn't know it at the time. He told us afterwards. And they went, they took six fish and dressed them. And they weighed the stuff that they took off of the, of the nasty dressed ones, guts and feathers and everything. So he gave us more money for our fish, and he took our customers, and he said...
They hadn't been doing that before. They were paying... Well, that's different from what I've heard from other older fishermen. They've always gotten a different price. But you always had to clean your fish.
Yeah. But,
so they weren't doing that here at this end of the river.
Yeah, they were cleaning their fish, but they were leaving them so dirty. They couldn't market them.
Oh, I see what you mean.
See?
They were cleaning them, but they weren't cleaning them good.
No. Just slop through them, you know.
Hmm.
So,
now, what year was that that you were
that was, let's see, that must have been in about 50... Hmm. Oh, dear. It's about 57, I believe.
Hmm.
57 or 58.
Uh-huh.
About 58, I don't know.
And that Blue Creek is way down past Astor?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No, it's before you get to Astor. Blue Creek goes off to the end of the Volusia Bar, the gap down there, goes off to the right. It's on that side of the river.
Uh-huh.
And Astor is on down around the river,
right.
down, see. It, Blue Creek comes off. Here's the big rig. Blue Creek and the Astor's on down here.
Okay.
And so Mr. Parker said to us, "Well, why don't you stay and fish for me for a couple of weeks and kind of let my boy see how you do it and how you clean your fish." And so I called back home, and Claudine was there. She had come for the summer. And she said, "Mother, you might just as well stay," because she said the weather is so awful up here. This was in April. "You might just as well stay because the weather's so awful up here." And so we stayed, I believe it was, 10 days more. And Mary Ann, in those 10 days, Mr. Parker gave us a good price for our fish. And we were bringing in about 300 pounds dressed, average a day. We'd dress them in the boat and
That's
bring them
amazing.
In.
That's
amazing. And so we fished for him. And so he said, "Will you come back next season?" And we didn't make him any promises. But we did come back.
And then when did you settle here, really move here?
We then fished for him. He bought our fish. We fished, or we camped down here by these big live oaks.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day he said, "Oh, in the meantime, Bus and I had found a house down on the Drayton Island, on the end of it."
Oh, neat.
And we had some money, and so we were bickering to buy it.
Uh-huh.
It was a big old pink house. It had 40 acres of orange grove and dock and everything right at the head of the island. So it came time for us to go back north. So we asked Mr. Parker if he would find it for us. We left him $1,100 to to find the thing. We came back and he hadn't done a thing about it. He said, I want you all over here on this lot.
Wow.
Well, we leased the lot for, I believe, 2 or 3 years. Then we decided to buy. So then we got the deed for it and built. That was in 63 that we built. And
so then you were here to stay?
No, we'd go back home, back north in the summertime.
Uh-huh.
And in the meantime, up north, we sold the place at Aquaca, bought one at Thompson. Mm-hmm. Well, at first we didn't buy, we just parked below the gate, and then they found out it was for sale. That was in 57. And so we bought this place on the end of the island, and it was all
fenced. And do you still go back north?
Still went back north in the summertime.
Do you
and
still do that now?
Oh, no.
In the summer? No.
No, what stopped that? Bus got sick. And it was in 72 is the last time we were up there. In the meantime, well, we disposed that place up there and called this headquarters.
Yeah.
And this will be 22 years old, Valentine's Day.
Oh, great. It's a good anniversary.
Uh-huh. And so we've been here. Well, let's see, Pam Parker was 17 months old when we came.
Wow.
I think she's 28 now, something like that.
Uh-huh.
28 or 9. So.
And so Parker's Fish House there was going full steam.
Oh, yes.
And when did it close down?
About 14 years ago, or 12 years ago. So I think Grandpa Parker's been gone, I believe it was 15 years. So it must be about 12 or 13 years ago if they closed that down. Mrs. Parker and Junior couldn't seem to handle it, and they got to feuding between them, and so they closed
it
down.
So is that why it closed down, just that they couldn't manage it?
Mm-hmm.
Because
it was a going concern.
It was?
One of the biggest on this side of the river.
Mm-hmm. Because a lot of fish houses have closed down, I thought, because not as much fish being caught.
And this was just pure mismanagement.
Uh-huh. So,
and the feuding of the family.
Uh-huh, that's too bad.
Yes, it was. And it put a lot of fishermen out of, a loss of the market, you see.
But couldn't they just go on up to Willacka to St. John's Fish House?
Oh, they, a lot of them did.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. In fact, Mrs. Parker bought in up there,
mm-hmm.
and was running it for a while, but they couldn't even, she finally eventually lost all that.
Oh.
So
wow.
It was just mismanagement.
Yeah.
Just.
So was there a fish camp here? Did they rent out those little cabins up
no,
there?
No, no.
Storage or?
No, those were. The little building, the first one you come to was the office, and then the others were just storage.
Uh-huh.
We had a big hurricane come through here. This is when the old fish house used to set out way out on the end of the pier,
mm-hmm.
and the hurricane messed it all up.
Oh, that's too bad.
Uh-huh.
So it's been basically just all shut up for the last 12 or 14
mm-hmm.
years.
And they gradually have sold this and that and the other out of all the the ice and their freezers and all that kind of stuff. They,
wow.
Yeah, it's just a dead.
So now who lives down here now? Just the Parkers?
Yes. Mrs. Okay. Parker lives in the little house on this side, and Junior Parker lives.
Yeah, I knocked on her door. I thought that was your house.
Oh.
No, okay.
And she sent you down here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
okay.
That was the young people.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I then we went to Georgia. We didn't come down here for, I believe it was 3 seasons, and then Bus got sick, and we couldn't carry on up there with the people that we furnished all their fish for the
uh-huh.
for their fish camp. They had a restaurant, and
uh-huh.
he followed us down here, wanted us to come back. Bus said, "I am not well enough to carry on a good and fish for you, you know, dependable." He said, "I won't." So he had emphysema caused from the poison in the we were fishing the Seminole Lake, and they were spraying the camps up there for mosquitoes. And instead of the plane coming and spraying the, it was getting kind of late, Bus had gone to put out his line. He came right down that whole lake and sprayed that whole bunch of stuff he had in that plane so he could get back to headquarters. Didn't even hit the fish camps where he was supposed to.
Oh, no.
Well, there wasn't any way for Bus to get out of it. It was right down over the boats. No, I don't know if anybody else was affected or not, but it affected Bus an awful lot. There was no way to get a good breath of fresh air. He couldn't
that's
run out of it. It just sprayed the whole.
That's
so that's what started him.
Yeah.
Well, he went into pneumonia.
Oh, no.
Well, they got him over that. And then we didn't realize at the time there's a tobacco fields up there. That when they have harvested their tobacco, they quit spraying.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we didn't know that they sprayed these. Well, when we'd go early in the morning and all that dew and everything would revive all that poison.
Mm-hmm.
And Bus kept getting along in the afternoon after we'd been, he'd get so choked up that he couldn't hardly breathe.
Uh-huh.
That was finished.
Yeah.
Now, he smoked all his life, but it wasn't that that caused the emphysema. It was these insecticides.
That's too bad.
So,
Well, when you two were fishing on the St. John's, were you just catlining or were you using other
no.
methods?
No, just catlining.
By
that time, we had learned that you could, fishing your catlines year-round, you could make more by sticking to them every day, our Sundays. You know when our Sundays were? A blowy day like today.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we fished right on through.
So did you leave those lines out all the
time?
No,
we did what they call jump lining.
Okay.
We put them in a different place every time. Because if you catch the fish in this place, it's going to be a little while before they move in.
Yeah.
Go to a different place.
How many lines would you run at one time?
At that time, we were fishing anywhere from 12 to 15.
And how many hooks per line?
100.
That's a lot.
Uh-huh. They were shipped up every day.
And
baited every night and put out and then go out and pick them up.
You put them out at night then?
Ordinarily, because if you put them out too early, the little fish wet away your bait and you're fishing with empty hooks. A lot of them empty hook fish down here, but that's not very satisfactory. There's only about two seasons that they'll hit empty hooks.
Really? What would you use as bait?
Oh, we used a various lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And the funniest of all, bubble gum.
Really? You know, could I turn this around a little bit?
Yeah. That wind just...
Cold natured or something today.
No, it's a... Can you get it? There you go.
There we go.
Maybe you slide your jacket on.
Yeah, I think so. It's just this wind is coming right through.
It's blowing the heat right on through.
Yeah, it really
is. If we, Marianne, if we had built this before we built the house, I don't think, and lined it,
mm-hmm.
we wouldn't have built the house.
Really?
Huh?
Wow, this is great. You spend all your days out here.
Most of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now you used bubble gum as bait sometimes. You chew it up first or do you use it unchewed?
Unchewed.
Okay.
But just little pieces, maybe a quarter of an inch square. Put on the hook, and I just went wild over it.
Really?
We used to buy 5 and 10 pounds at a time. One of the fellows that was building the contractors, Tony Rosamunda, came in one day. He said, "What are you baiting with?" And I said, "Bubble gum." "Who in the world chews all that?" And I said, "We don't chew it."
And so they went for that pretty well.
Oh,
huh?
Yes.
What
and
else?
Soap.
And what kind of soap would you use?
Camay, usually.
Camay.
Uh-huh.
Now, was that a pretty cheap bait? It would seem that would be expensive.
No, we rigged us up a little wire cutter, and you about a quarter inch squares, and then just run your hook through it and put it out.
Wow.
And ivory soap was good,
uh-huh.
but the camay was better.
Wow.
And then we fished worms, grubs, maggots, crickets. Oh, yeah. It goes on minnows. Go down here, you can't fish minnows. One place that we hit, you couldn't fish minnows unless it was cut bait.
Right.
So you know how the fishermen got away with that?
How?
Cut one of the prongs or fins or the tail fins off, leave the other one. Just cut bait, see?
Yeah. Wow. all sorts of ways to get around things.
And for a long time, worms were banned down here, but they finally took that off. Mm. They when we were fishing dead lakes up there, they up in the upper end of Florida.
Now, when you were going out and pulling in your lines, which would be early in the morning, is
that oh, yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. What would you call a good haul? Like every other hook with a fish? Or?
Yes. That would be a good... most we ever caught on 100 hooks was 98.
That's pretty good.
and the least, I think, maybe run anywhere from 12 to 15. That was a poor catch.
Yeah. What makes a good cat liner? What are the characteristics?
Persistence.
What else?
A weak mind and a wide mind. Because you spend so much of your time, you know, setting and not much exercise, especially with trial lines where you have to ship them up. Mm-hmm. But we, along towards the last, we got so that we hired these people over here to dress our fish.
Uh-huh.
And then we'd pay them.
Right.
Because we could catch more fish by putting on more lines.
Yeah.
And so that way.
Who's the best cat liner today on the river?
That I couldn't tell you. I just couldn't tell you. I haven't kept up with the boys mm-hmm. up in this. In fact, when they put the nets and baskets to working up here,
mm-hmm.
Most of the cat liners quit.
Mm.
I think there's only maybe one or two that I do know of. Mm-hmm. One of them's a little Oxidine boy down here. And,
which one?
Eddie.
Eddie, I talked to him the other day.
Did you?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I've lost track of them since busting. I don't fish anymore.
Yeah. How many years has it been since you were fishing?
Five. See, Bus got six. And when we first came back down, we fished a little bit, but we couldn't keep it up because he wasn't up to it. So we got so that all that we did then was just for the freezer.
Uh-huh, just enough to keep y'all. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's been about 5 years since.
Wow.
So maybe six. Because
mm-hmm.
he's been gone 3. But, Marianne, that was kind of a devastating thing.
Oh, I'm sure.
He wanted to fish so bad, and he had on the lines when we pick them up. If there was a kind of a dead weight hooked on,
mm-hmm.
You knew there wasn't any action. It must be somebody's gear. So he pulled it up, released, and he had 3 fish or crab traps, and he had mended them and had them in his boat and wanted to. And the water went so low, we couldn't get the boat launched.
Wow.
And he waited and waited and waited. And then 4 days after he was gone, that water came up, and it was up for 2 whole years before it ever went down again.
Mm-hmm. That's
just uncanny.
Yeah.
Just wasn't meant that he should go, I guess. But.
Well, did y'all ever do monkey fishing?
Oh, no.
You didn't do that?
We tried to tell them and tried to tell them.
Yeah.
What they were doing to their when that first started here.
Yeah, where do you think that came from?
I don't know, but some of the Illinois people were doing it up there
on the Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Not so much the Mississippi River itself, but the backwaters.
Uh-huh.
And of course they were pretty rough on them up there. Well, down here they could get by. I don't know how many times Mr. Parker would bail his monkey fishermen out just to get some fish in here.
Yeah.
Well, what it does, when Busty and I was working for the conservation department, mm-hmm. we would take surveys of lakes. All right. It shocks them and you don't give them enough current, why, it just shocks them. Mm-hmm. But here's the payoff. It doesn't kill them, but not, they won't spawn. And if they do spawn,
everything's dead.
Dead.
Yeah.
See? And these people here didn't realize what they were doing to their fish. We tried to tell them. That's the gas went out. Well, it comes 4 o'clock. I'll have to,
I've got to go after a bottle of gas at
oh,
4
you
o'clock.
Do.
At
yeah.
4. Can you stand it out here or shall we?
Oh, it's fine. Yeah. This is just fine.
It won't cool off that much before 4.
Yeah, I've got to go for too long. I'm supposed to talk to Mrs. Parker up here.
Oh.
At 3 o'clock or 3:30.
Okay, that'll work out just right.
Yeah, it will.
So,
So, did you try to tell people that it would kill the,
yeah,
that it would...
Because we had worked with the conservation and
yeah,
we knew what it did
yeah
to them. But they wouldn't believe us. So, this lake was practically dead for 3 years.
Yeah.
Before new stock could come in and because they were hitting it hard.
Mm-hmm.
Hard. They worked
yeah
this thing over night and day and night.
Yeah.
And if they got caught, they got all going right back at it.
Yeah.
And got bailed out.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
So after that, well, then the law got and the judge changed, and they couldn't be bought off anymore. And then they really got rough with them. And so I don't think they do too much monkey fishing anymore.
Yeah, I haven't heard that they do any much.
A few real brave ones, but they got so they were so rough on them that they had to quit because they couldn't make a living.
Right.
Marianne, there was a funny thing happened here. Oh, Willie Lott.
I don't know him.
Pardon?
I don't know him.
No, he's up in North Carolina now.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a big family, and he monkey fish. Well, they got so hot on his tail that he just couldn't monkey fish because somebody was right there with him just about all the time. They really put us. And so one day, Bus came over from the fish house with
uh-huh
his, from delivering his fish over there. And he said, I want you to go over and see what Willie Lott's doing over there
uh-huh
with his lines. He was setting up a trout line. He just couldn't get moved of what somebody was breathing down his neck, you see. And he had this family to feed. Well, what Willie was doing, we brought swivels down from the north.
Uh-huh.
When we were fishing up there, our lines, the fish would twist so much and twist them off. And I said, Buzz, well, you know, we put swivels on our sport fishing to keep our fishing. Why wouldn't it work on our trout lines?
Mm-hmm.
So the only contact I had with swivels was out in Seattle, Washington. There was an ad in one of our sporting magazines, so I sent out there, and they were penny a piece. So that cost, at that time, I had them a story. At that time, they were 5 cents a piece.
Wow, that's a lot.
So we set up one line. Marianne, we saved enough fish from twisting off to have paid for that line.
Wow.
So that's when we got to, well, we only looped them on. Just half hitched them on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just gave you one.
Yeah.
So, Busty said, I want you to see what Willie's doing to his. He was tying a knot on each side of the hook, of the swivel, I mean.
Uh-huh.
That gave it this and this. So it didn't take me very long to change ours, and I put knots on each side of ours. Now, there was the dumbest man on the whole St. John's River. And Lake George came up with that idea of a knot on each side.
Oh.
Well, over a period of time, Bus and I got a hold of some little beads that you clamp on. So we'd clamp a bead on each side. That way it was so much easier. Just measure
yeah
it off, clamp a bead, put it through, clamp another bead, and go on.
Do other people use swivels?
Now they do.
Now they
since
do?
Since Bus and I brought them down here from the north.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Because I haven't seen those.
No.
What do they look like?
They're just
different ordinary
shoes. I still keep them.
I
thought
they
were. Oh. Okay. See, I see.
see right here by the sugar.
Uh-huh, and then put the long line off there.
Oh, okay. And here's our low beads that we put on each side.
Huh. That's most interesting.
Oh, now, they didn't get onto this down here. They tie knots yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We had a place that we could get them.
That's great. What a smart idea.
Well, you see, like I told you, we learned the hard way. We tried to improve our way of fishing all along,
mm-hmm.
instead of...
just sticking with the old ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. We made some
Willie left here and went to North Carolina and Georgia.
And fished there.
He was in trouble all the time there.
Gosh.
He finally got set up, and now he's doing great. In fact, the Schmitz sell some of their shad to Willie.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's interesting.
Unbeknownst to this buyer here.
Uh-huh.
This buyer here shut them off, so they had to find themselves another. So that is on the QT. See, that's...
Yeah.
If this man here found out he was selling them, maybe he wouldn't take any of them. So,
awful.
Yeah.
Now, how did you meet the Schmitz?
Well, Bus and I was fishing. We were fishing up at Weeping Willow.
Mm-hmm.
It was on the St. John's, and Mr. Schmidt has hauled fish for Mr. Parker for years and years. I don't know how far back. And Mr. Parker sent him up there for our fish.
Uh-huh.
And we got acquainted with him. He didn't want us to leave Weeping Willow when we left there. We were catching about, close to 250
wow.
pounds a day.
That's a lot.
Of course, that made him a good haul because Mr. Parker paid him handsomely for hauling them for us.
Right.
And Jerome was kind of put out with us because we went back north. But over a period of time, well, then we'd meet him over here at the fish house after that.
Uh-huh.
And it went along a number of years. And one day he brought his wife and Frances.